Good afternoon, you're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, will he stay or will he go? Fine Gael waits with bated breath as Enda Kenny takes the weekend to make his mind up. Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney await the starting gun, but will others join them in the race to be leader? And the public inquiry into the smearing of Garda Sergeant Maurice McCabe, will it avoid lengthy legal delays and get the answers that he has sought? All of that to come with our panel, but first it's time for the news now with John Finnerty. John, thanks very much. Saturday with Clare Byrne, you're very welcome to the programme. And do get in touch over the course of the next hour. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie. The Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. Joining us today, we have Regina Doherty, Fine Gael TD and Government Chief Whip, John McGuinness, Fianna Fáil TD, Mary Lou MacDonald, Sinn Féin TD, Pat Leahy, Political Editor with the Irish Times, and Daniel McConnell, Political Editor with the Irish Examiner. And it's fairly obvious where we're going to start. Just reading this quote from an unnamed source today. If Enda has not given an exit timeline before or at next week's party meeting, then a very damaging all-out and ugly row will erupt. Regina, do you agree?
Well, I don't think it'll come to that, to be honest with you, because what the Taoiseach asked for at last week's parliamentary party was a little bit of space and that he would come back to us. And I think there's an overwhelming majority of people who have not only the respect but the due regard for him. And I say this outside of being Taoiseach, right, because I'm not going to sit here and tell you all of the things, the wonderful things he's done as the Taoiseach. Just leave that aside for a second, just if this is just to be a Fine Gael thing. He has done a tremendous amount for us in Fine Gael over... particularly the last 15 years. And just because of that, if no other reason, he deserves the due respect and regard to give him the bit of space to talk to his friends and his family and to make decisions himself and come back to
and
us.
What, have you spoken as Chief Whip to those who've come out and said, it's time to go now, the Alan Farrells, the Noel Rocks and others?
I haven't spoken to them. I had text correspondence with one of them during the week. But no, I mean, and at the end of the day, with respect, my job isn't to tell people what to do within the Fine Gael party. My job is to get legislation passed. And so that's where I would have authority.
But on a human level, I get the impression from what you're saying that you feel very strongly that they perhaps should not be saying what they're saying.
Shouldn't be saying what they're saying.
Have you made that known to them? Have you told them to put a lid on it?
Indirectly, yes, we have. And it's not my place to tell people not to say what they want to say. This man is an inherently decent man. You will find it difficult to get something different from people who have met with him or have had dealings with him. At the very least, just to have respect for him as a human being. Let him go home to his family, his loved ones, his friends and close colleagues to have a conversation about what his plans are, and let's just sit and wait and listen to him. You know, if you dislike what he says next week, well, then people can make their expressed views at that stage. But, like, don't start this second-guessing business or this even blackmailing business, because it's unedifying. And actually, we're better than that. So,
is that what you think they're doing by saying, look, if you don't tell us by Wednesday when we have the parliamentary party meeting, we'll have this vote? Essentially, it's blackmail.
Yeah, because you're putting a marker down. And I'm sorry, at the end of the day, I know in our game, there's a view that we're all is somewhat sole traders. But at the end of the day, we choose to hang together in a body that is considered a broad church of Fine Gael. We certainly have different views, mostly about everything, right? And that's what's healthy about it. And most of it's leaked within 5 minutes of a PP starting on a Wednesday evening, you know. But this is different. Yeah. This is about the future direction.
Say the journalists here,
This is about the future direction of a political party. And it's far greater than two or three people who have red line issues, you know, at the moment. That we have a membership of over 35,000 people who all have to have a say. We have a very large body of county councillors, and albeit it's less than it was 2 years ago. And then we have the parliamentary party. And each are as important as the other with regard to the views. But the overwhelming view of the Fine Gael body politic from the membership up is that we owe him a debt, and the very least we can afford him is the time and the space to get his...
Is that the overwhelming view, though? Because there's a suggestion, certainly in the Irish Independent today, that Leo Varadkar is very impatient to get this thing moving.
I would categorically say that that is not true. From my interactions during the week, there are none of the both declared, even though nobody has declared, but the obvious candidates, they are not impatient, as in the sense of drawing down or putting markers down for next Wednesday night. There's absolutely nobody who has worked with Enda Kenny, even in the short space of time that I have, or the long space of time that some of the other colleagues have, want to see the undignified mess that has evolved over the last couple of days. We owe him, as a decent human being, far greater than that. And that's what our overwhelming aim is.
So, Daniel?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there are a couple of issues to come in on that. One, this narrative that Enda deserves whatever. I mean, he's the elected leader of our country. He's there to do a job to serve the people. And this idea that he should be given either 2 weeks or 12 weeks, you know, in terms of a fond farewell, I think a lot of people, even within Fine Gael, have an issue with that. And I think, I know there's an opinion poll out tomorrow in one of the newspapers, and I think a lot of people in Fine Gael are on tenderhooks because I think it's not going to be good news, I think, you know, it's fair to say. I think also as well, you know, this idea that, you know, Enda Kenny has done so much. I mean, this is a crisis of his own making. His mishandling of this, he brought this upon himself. And I don't think there's unanimity within the party as to how quick or how long this process should go. I certainly think from Simon Coveney's point of view, a longer process is more beneficial for him. I do get the sense from some of Leo Varadkar's supporters that there is a growing impatience, and it's clear that the three or four people who have declared, like the Alan Farrells and the Noel Rocks and the Pat Dearings, who've come out urging a process, even a discussion, are all associated with the Leo Varadkar side of the house, not the Simon Coveney house.
But he says that he had nothing to do with their decisions.
I do appreciate that, but I do think, like, let's just take a step back and add all the pieces together. They may not have done it on instruction, but they may still think that in Leo's best interest down the line, it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. But then you can't call it orchestrated. You know, actually, what was bizarre about the headline this morning, well, I mean, I've been subject to certain headlines myself lately, right, but it's no bearing to the content of the story. So the headline is that he orchestrated a jet. The story, I think, is in The Independent this morning.
We're talking about whether there's an orchestrated campaign or not.
One part of the story says it was orchestrated that he sent Noel Rock out. The second part of the story was that it was orchestrated that he sent Owen Murphy out to bring Noel Rock back in. I'm sorry, I'm dizzy. The fellow was in Colombia. I don't know how you organise all of these things. So, like, there's a lot of...
Not in fairness, they do have telephones in Colombia.
No, I know. There's a lot of... rumours going around over the last week. There's a lot of things being pitched to people to see what their reaction are. Is that I heard somebody else say and you say it to me, so you're looking and judging for my reaction. There is no orchestrated campaign has kicked off yet. I can absolutely categorically guarantee you that. It hasn't. I have not witnessed it. There may be people cuddled in corners, or even, you know, I had lunch with four people the other day. We laughed about it, that you get a bad name for sitting at this table, right? It's that level. The vast majority of the people in my parliamentary party, and the response that I've got from my members is that we respect and have due regard for Enda Kenny to give him the time and the space that he asked for last Wednesday, and that's what should happen.
When it comes down to it, though, are you a Leo supporter?
I'm not.
Two papers say that you are today.
Oh, well, I haven't seen those either yet. I'm not an anybody supporter yet. Right now, I have a boss. And to be honest with you, I will give him the due regard and respect to allow him to come back to us next week to see what it is that he wants to do. And at that stage, and I will have no problem when there is a political race for the new leader of our party to declare who I'm supporting when I've made up my mind at that stage, right? But right now, I have a boss. And I have respect for the work that he has done, not only for Fine Gael, but for the country. And I will give him the space that he's asked for.
OK. So you don't have a view on a timeline on whether he should go in 2 weeks or 1 week or 12 weeks?
Well, I certainly would have a view that it wouldn't be 1 week or 2 weeks. I don't have a view about a longer term because genuinely I want to hear what he has to say.
I don't want to make up his mind, but I'm certainly not going to put him under pressure. If he comes back next week and says, I'm going to go in 12 weeks, does that not make it very difficult for him to negotiate on Brexit, for example, with authority? Well, everybody knows that he's leaving anyway.
It depends, Claire, on what it is that he wants to set out that he wants to do. So let's be clear, I'm quite sure that he has unfinished business, but I want to hear what he has to say. And then we'll make up.
Pat Leahy, is there reason enough for Enda Kenny to stay on beyond a couple of weeks?
Difficult to see what it might be. I suppose, as Regina says, we'll see what he says next week. But the events of the last week have completely changed the context. The game is on now. There's a leadership campaign on. People are drawing up lists, have been since the middle of the week. They're putting ticks or X's beside those lists. Everything that they say, and we see that in the coverage this morning, everything that they say both about this process and about anything they may choose to say about broader and perhaps more significant political events will be interpreted in the light of the contest that is ongoing. It's very difficult to see how the normal business of government can take place in a productive or normal fashion with all of that happening. The energy of politics at government level will now be overwhelmingly directed at this issue, and that will be the case until it is resolved.
Who's in the race?
Simon and Leo. I think that's the meaningful race.
And what about Richard Bruton and this talk?
Other people may run, although I think we're at the stage of people ruling themselves out now. Other people may run. There is apparently some chat which he has chosen not to knock down by Richard Bruton. A number of this, and this
why
is what
would,
I mean by
would
everything.
He run? What would be the reason for him to run?
To ensure that he remains in cabinet. So this is what I mean by everything that everybody says is now will now be interpreted in the light of this this overwhelming issue until such time as it is resolved. The meaningful race and the choice for Fine Gael is between Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar, and the over the next week or two, I think what they will be trying to do is to delineate that choice for people to distinguish themselves from each other, and to offer a vision for the future, not just of Fine Gael, but of the country, because the leader of Fine Gael will presumably become the next Taoiseach.
OK, and the numbers then, I mean, the papers, it seems to be consensus that it's Leo's to lose. Is that what our political editors think?
I think it's a little bit closer. Now, in the Irish Times, we've been talking to people about it all week. I'm not sure we're at the stage yet where you can have a definitive head count, but an indicative head count that we've been, and I'm sure Danny and his colleagues have been trying to do it as well, suggests to me that the current disposition of forces within the parliamentary party, at least, is closer certainly than many people might have suspected beforehand. Leo will be a winner with the public, and if that is polled over the next period of time, as I expect it will be, that will probably show a much greater public recognition of Leo Varadkar. He has one priceless attribute going into this election, and that is that the public almost see him as a kind of a, almost not really a politician at all, or they believe he's different to other politicians. Now that, I suspect, is something that has a limited enough lifespan, because after he has been Taoiseach, if that is what happens, and is up in the Dáil answering questions every other day, it, I think, will become apparent to people that he is in fact a politician. But that is one great advantage he has with the public. Now the public is not the electorate in this case, though of course Fine Gael will be taking their views into account.
Mm-hmm. John McInnes, you wished Enda Kenny well during the week at the Finance Committee, and I think his response was c'est la vie to you. But, you know, sitting there as you are watching all of this play out, is it Fianna Fáil's worst nightmare now if you see Leo Varadkar going in there? You'll have to give him a while for the shine to wear off.
I don't think it is. But I think that this week for Enda Kenny, it was, you know, the tipping point. And with all of what happened, the game was truly out then into the public domain. People began to talk openly about his departure, and you had various councillors and TDs wanting to set a date. So when that happens, it's all energy to the race, and that's what's going to happen from now on. And I think that looking at the Taoiseach the other day, he was before us, as Regina was, the Finance Committee, we were dealing with budgets, and he was doing the job to the best of his ability, while at the same time you could see there was something going on in his head about the real position, which was his leadership. And I suppose on a personal note, when you see that going on in politics, I was just acknowledging that. I mean, behind the Taoiseach, behind all these rows, there's an individual, a man and his family and so on. And I was acknowledging that. And The politics is a brutal game, and for both Leo and Simon, they've really set the pace in this. And I think that what's going on today is that those that don't want either one of them to lead the party are probably looking at someone that has offended Enda Kenny less than the two frontrunners. And now God knows what might happen. But one of the key issues here is that while all of that is going on, the country is in a pretty precarious place. And I see that from a business perspective. I see it politically then in the Dáil. And there's no grasp of where we're going. And last week was caused by a lack of leadership. It was caused by people not speaking to each other in terms of their presentation in the Dáil. And it was shambolic. It was embarrassing to watch it. And I'm sure that those, we talk about people being impatient in Fine Gael. People outside Fine Gael, the public, are hugely impatient.
So can we all now accept, and this includes Fianna Fáil, that new politics doesn't work?
Because it hasn't
worked. That seems to be the consensus. And actually, Pat, you were writing today about how Cabinet is not working. And it was fascinating to see that there is no communication prior to a Cabinet meeting when things need to be agreed, discussed, examined in advance, because everyone's terrified that it'll be leaked.
It seems to me that the fundamentally, and we saw two cabinet ministers coming out during the week and complaining that the system of circulation of memoranda before cabinet had broken down. Ironic in that one of the cabinet members who was complaining about that, Catherine Zappone, had herself sat quietly at a cabinet meeting which discussed the setting up of a commission of inquiry, as the plan then was, without mentioning a huge elephant in the room, that being the TUSLA allegations against Sergeant Maurice McCabe. So it seems to me, and this is a view privately held, certainly by several members of the cabinet that I spoke to, but also by senior officials, that the system of government is not working now.
I wonder why that particular problem exists, though, at cabinet level. Is that because of the digital age and everything is so easily shared?
It was very funny, actually, at the cabinet briefing last week. You know, people mightn't be aware, but there's a post-cabinet briefing for a political correspondence. And the phrase used by the government press secretary was, it's a very effusive cabinet, i.e. it's leaking like a sieve all over the place. And the dangers you have, I think Pascal Donoghue found this a couple of weeks ago, where he put a memo down on the cabinet agenda on a Friday and it ended up being on the front page of the Sunday Independent about, you know, budget warnings and kind of estimates and all the rest of it. That's the danger, that if you put it down on the agenda, it's going to leak out. But what ministers are finding, and I think Dennis Nocton had a sit-down meeting with Enda Kenny, and I think one of the main points he raised with the Taoiseach was, we need to find a better system. Like, we cannot have, you know, ministers bringing things in under the arm when we're not briefed, we don't have a chance to kind of respond properly.
But there's also a huge suspicion, Danny, of you know, the Fine Gael party and the Taoiseach. They are trying to set an agenda, as any political party would. They have to look then across to the independent benches and get their approval. And when I looked at the independent benches this week, Shane Ross and Finian were not there to be seen for most of the week. And then, in answer to the question that the media posed, the answer was, I'll talk to Micheál in the morning and I'll see. It's very difficult to get that kind of, any kind of a decision through that process. And it isn't working for the public and it isn't working for the members of Parliament either. And the committee system is totally dysfunctional.
Just to say, obviously it's for Fine Gael to decide who their leader is. And I would anticipate that Fine Gaelers would demonstrate that level of respect to Enda Kenny. I imagine, I have no special insight, as you can imagine, to Fine Gael, but I would imagine quite outside of the parliamentary
party.
You got
the head chewed off you in the Dáil during the week
we'll come to that. I would imagine that within the grassroots there would be an expectation that some level of respect is afforded, and I imagine that there might be a penalty against anybody who's seen to move preemptively. So you're seeing all of that dynamic going on, and as fascinating as that is for us in this studio, as much as it will fill the pages of newspapers for the next while, outside of our bubble, lots of people, with all due respect, aren't hugely animated or bothered. What does concern people and what concerns me is the position of Taoiseach more than the position of Fine Gael leader and the direction of the government. So we had
this person is likely to be Taoiseach, at least for a short period of time.
Let me come to that.
It probably will concern people.
It will. In terms of this person assuming the office of Taoiseach, everybody around the table, I think, has indicated the fact that Cabinet seems to have malfunctioned. This new politics business is shown to be dysfunctional, unstable. You have all of those dynamics, it seems to me, around the cabinet table. And then outside of the room, you have Fianna Fáil, who, for all intents and purposes, are part of the government, but are at a remove. That's incredibly unstable. I have my own views as are well articulated around Enda Kenny and his cabinet colleagues and their underperformance in government. My view is that they all should go. But we now have a scenario where Theresa May will trigger Article 50. You're into all of that and the uncertainty and challenges that that brings. You have a scenario where, and this is just a for instance, in the course of the week we learn that rent increases hit record highs, I think on daft.ie since they began taking records. And we've never needed stability and good leadership and competence and accountability in government.
But in the midst of all of that,
now.
Sinn Féin was calling for an election.
Yes, and I still believe we should have an election. Actually, this turn of events around Fine Gael and who'll be in and who'll be out and who'll be Taoiseach and who won't. I mean, given everything that's happened, I think this is a highly opportune moment to give people their say. You ask me how will that provide stability. I take the view that when you see incompetence and confusion, if it were simply confusion. I'm of the view that Francis Fitzgerald misled the Dáil, not last week, the week before. That's my view. I've seen nothing to dissuade me of that position. When that comes into light, very fundamental questions come about the government that is in place. And it is in a functioning democracy, when governments hit the rocks, they go back to the people.
If you had your way and if Sinn Féin had its way, Theresa May would be triggering Article 50 mm-hmm. on the 9th of May and we'd be in the middle of an election campaign. So it's going to be before the end of March
and it will that's the opening salvo in what will be a very long and a very, very difficult and potentially a very, very dangerous process for this country, north and south. And yes, we need a government in place. You need a competent government. You're not going to convince me, and I say this with all due respect to everybody concerned on a personal level, that Enda Kenny or the assorted personalities around that cabinet table are the right people or the competent people to bat on our behalf, north and south, in Brexit. I do not believe that is the case, and I think that became very, very clear in the course
of
this week.
But Mary Lou, we're dealing with the result that the electorate gave us in the last general election. And while we participated in the attempt to elect Micheál Martin, as did Fine Gael with their man and so on, you didn't. And as a result of that, we have a situation now that has been thrown up from an election campaign, that has been stitched together politically, that is not working, as you say. And I think what we're doing is now we have a government that is on notice. And we have very short time left, isn't
it? Can I just put it to you, John, just to put it to you that way, that's your interpretation of events. Let me suggest a different analysis of what happened, because the election gave nobody a clear majority. It threw up lots of different and varied political forces. What it also did, though, was it did give Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael combined a very, very clear, a very substantial majority in the House. And I would say to you, Fine Gael suggested, I think not unreasonably from their point of view, because there isn't a huge amount of policy difference between the two parties, made the suggestion of a coalition arrangement. Fianna Fáil stayed away from that. Fianna Fáil stayed away from that, not with an eye to the greater national interest, I don't believe, but for their own party political positioning. And you were entitled to do that. That's your call. But I think it's entirely wrong for you to say to us, particularly given that your party leader was vociferous in saying that no way under God's green earth would he dream of speaking to Sinn Féin. It's a bit rich then to kind of say, well, Sinn Féin are to blame for all of this. We have to have government. Yeah, we need good government.
We were all put in the spotlight at that time and we all had to respond in our own different ways, remembering mm-hmm. the background of the politics of this. And had we not voted the way we did or offered to facilitate this government, we wouldn't have had a government. We'd have been back in again to a general election. And regardless of what you think, and Fine Gael will say the economy is going okay, it isn't.
I know, I'm well aware of that. Yeah.
And we have to iron out those difficulties first and then have a general election. That's what we're going to have. And now in the middle of this, we have the Fine Gael party replacing its leadership. And it doesn't make for good reading and it doesn't make for good decisions.
And I'm sure you'll also agree with me, John, because I have increasingly come of the view that this new politics arrangement in the Dáil chamber was to afford Fianna Fáil the opportunity of being in government and opposition all at once. Fine Gael to govern, a spot in the limelight for some of our independent colleagues, but also to quell what was a very evident political dynamic around other political voices, including Sinn Féin, and to kind of render all of that nearly to the margins. And if you watch the way in which, for instance, we brought forward legislation on rent certainty, legislation around zero-hour contracts, really important things, good proposals by any standard, and nearly just for the heck of it, Fianna Fáil, along with the government forces, either block those changes or kick them way down the road.
But you've rendered yourself.
Sinn Féin has rendered itself
irrelevant because it doesn't hasn't participated in the formation of government.
For the first time in the Dáil, we now have
a situation where those that are appointed tellers. Parties don't appoint tellers and the vote collapses.
Okay. Regina.
Do you know what's interesting? Because we are where we are right now. We can go back and relive last year's election that's very close to coming up to its year's anniversary. Different political parties chose themselves to put them in the margins. Fine Gael very clearly stated that we wanted to be in government. Even having lost the amount of seats that we did the day after the election result was pulled, Enda Kenny said that he wanted to be in government. We are in government. Minority government, particularly given the amount of minority that we are, is difficult. And it depends on relations. And we have people sitting around the table who historically didn't have the best of relations. But we do want to govern. And notwithstanding the difficulties that we're having within Fine Gael at the moment, what we are trying to do is to keep peace within our industrial relations mechanism of the Haddington Road, is to try and deal with stuff, other issues that we have as a result of a growing economy around our transport infrastructure, our transport bodies having their own difficulties, the industrial relations that we have with like there are different things going on that are now resulting because the economy is growing, but to also manage that in a careful and considered way so that the people who've had most taken out of their back pockets over the last 10 years get back, as well as us trying
to
put into services.
And John McGuinness says we're heading for an election.
We're the clear party that says we want to do that. If there's an election, albeit we'll fight it and we'll stand on exactly the same mandate as we had the last time, maybe with more of a social justice point on it. But it's certainly not something that we're...
A little less keep the recovery going, I'd say, for next time.
I think we might have had enough of that already.
It's very difficult to put policies in place, Regina, when you lose votes every single week.
That's true, but...
It just can't function like that.
John, I have 50 members. I'm not to be disrespectful, but that's what the electorate gave me. But let's go back to something that Mary Lou did say. We are very close to Theresa May, who was third in the electoral race for her leadership of her party. So when we were talking earlier on about Richard Bruton, just keep that in mind. They're about to trigger Article 50. We have the North institutions in an election race at the moment that probably won't see the institutions reinstated for at least 12 months. So they'll have nobody but officials to represent them in the Brexit negotiations. We need a competent, stable government in whatever shape or form it takes in the Republic of Ireland to make sure that we, as one of 27 member states, make sure that we get the best deal. Okay. Right now, Fine Gael are the only people that tell you that want to go.
Can I just say, can you just hold that thought until after this break? We'll be back. A listener says, the first question last Sunday to the Taoiseach was when did he first become aware of the Tusla file? Olivia O'Leary said on the Late Late Show on Friday night that she finds it worrying that we've not got an answer to this question. Could Regina throw some light on this, as the public would really like an answer one full week later? That's Bernard in Blackrock.
Well, the only thing I can tell you is what the Taoiseach said in the chamber this week was that he found out about the Tusla file, the contents of it, one from the primetime programme.
Okay, this idea that Enda Kenny is a great leader has to be put in perspective. He rose to power on the back of a Fianna Fáil implosion. Whoever was leader of Fine Gael at that point would have become Taoiseach. He then led Fine Gael into a 2014 election. They were the local elections, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
2016 election, I imagine this person means, where they lost a huge amount of seats. Any other leader at that point would have been removed. So a great leader, I'm not sure, but definitely a lucky one. Is that fair, Pat Leahy?
Well, Enda has been lucky over the course of his career. He was lucky in losing elections as well as winning elections. So he lost the first time he stood for the leadership of Fine Gael. He was lucky to lose that, because had he not, had he became leader when Michael Noonan did, he'd have been turfed out a year later, having lost the 2002 general election. He was lucky to lose the 2007 general election,
because
had he become Taoiseach at that stage, the crash would have hit him just as it hit Brian Cowan. So Enda has, I suppose, been lucky, but he has also been tough. He's also been resilient. He's also been better at politics than lots of people have given him credit for. And, you know, I suppose the time is not quite here yet for the assessments of Enda Kenny's career. But anybody who's in politics over 40 years, I suppose, is going to be lots of different things to say.
Listen, one thing I did mean to ask you about at the outset was whether this story, I can't remember which paper it's in. Is it your paper, Danny, about Pascal Donoghue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was our lead this morning. Yeah.
The urging of Michael Noonan and Enda Kenny for Pascal to change his mind.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that's been kind of been kicked around for a number of weeks, and I was trying to stand it up a couple of weeks ago. But there is a sense that if Enda Kenny's going to go, they need a kind of a like-minded person who would look after or mind the Kennyites or the Kenny loyalists, because I think there is a feeling that neither Simon or Leo would fit the bill. And
are there many Kenny loyalists?
No, there are not a huge amount of them left, but there's still a rump, I would certainly think. But there's also a group of moderates who I think yet have to make up their mind.
But he was very clear, wasn't he, yesterday?
He was absolutely position. Clear. But I thought what was very interesting in his conversation on Morning Ireland yesterday morning was that he confirmed that approaches had been made and conversations had been made about, and you know, he had been like tapped up essentially to consider going. And I would certainly think that, like, I kind of rather unfairly maybe compared him to Francis Urquhart in the House of Cards many years ago, that as chief whip he, you know, initially refused and I'm only the chief whip, I'm not going to go, and then all of a sudden, like Lazarus, he kind of emerged as a compromise candidate towards the end. I still think there's a possibility that should events go a particular way, that Pascal Donoghue could still be emerged as a viable candidate, notwithstanding his repeated and insistence that he's not going to. But
doesn't it just tell you though how lucky we are in the position that if and when it does
come out with this,
and I've said it before, you see, it's true. Is this true? You're much more of a nerd from a political perspective,
thank
historian, than I am. Is it true at any other stage that we had such a wealth of choice?
No, I mean,
we have
mean,
so many talented young men.
We don't
and women
know if any of them are any good yet.
Well, you have to test to see, you know, but I mean, we'll get there.
I mean, the only other point I'd make in relation to Leo Varadkar, I mean, he is no doubt the darling of a certain cohort within Fine Gael. You know, Leo the rebellious, Leo the outspoken, Leo the maverick. He won't be able to be that person while he's Taoiseach. He will be Leo, the hold-the-line man, Leo to represent the establishment. He can't be the maverick as Taoiseach. And therefore, I think that will see a lot of people who on the side
moving towards
that.
I'm sure Leo's ears are well and truly burning at this stage.
Mary Lou, I told you before the break to hold that thought, and now I forget where we were.
No, that's okay. Regina was making the point around the necessity for a competent, stable government in respect of Brexit and the triggering of Article 50. I absolutely agree with you on that. That is not what we have now. That is not what we will have under Leo's or Simon's or the other Simon's or Pascal's, my constituency colleagues, watch. I just want to say in respect of the North, we are in elections. We'll face into those negotiations. They are going to be difficult because we're dealing with a number of very difficult issues around corruption, but also around the Good Friday Agreement, outstanding issues. But that's work that has to be done. Just bear in mind, Theresa May has made it very clear that the devolved administrations in Scotland, in Ireland, in Wales will have a very, very minimal role and minimal input, which actually brings us back to the point of how important the Dublin administration is, because the job will be not just to bat for agriculture, the economy and so on, east-west, you know, in terms of the South. This is an all-Ireland task for whoever it is on Taoiseach and for whatever administration is in place.
I can't see, though, how that gets you to the point where we're better off having an election now rather than letting Enda Kenny, for example, stay there for...
Claire, can I just tell you, I take put a lot of store by what people say to you the minute you hit the turf outside of Leinster House and you meet real people, as I like to call them, and they reflect on where things are at. The government has lost the confidence of the people. That's just a fact. And the chaos of last week and now all of the machinations within Fine Gael, which are natural because they're about to select a new leader, adds to all of that. Whoever is going to guide the ship of state at these times needs to have a very, very clear mandate, a clear head, and the best people around that table. So, and that's not the case now.
John McGuinness, from what you said earlier on, I get the impression, and I'm sure you'll tell me, that you agree with Mary Lou, that the people have lost, that the government has lost the confidence of the people.
Yeah, at
this yet, Fianna Fáil had the opportunity to pull the plug and didn't last week.
Yeah, we didn't. And I would not have liked to see that happen at this time. I prefer to see all of that tribunal and matters being put in place and put right before any election. But what happened last week in terms of the Dáil performance, it simply crystallised the view of people that actually we have quite a dysfunctional Dáil. And then for alongside that, and I have to say this, there are now many people in Fianna Fáil who dislike, absolutely dislike, the arrangement that we have within this government. Mm. And that's not necessarily, that arrangement is not necessarily going to survive, I think, if you know, this fight within Fine Gael goes on, and if there's a new leader, it bring up new dynamics, and we don't know what's going to happen. So people are growing tired in politics, in the parliament, in the Dáil, and how it functions, and people outside are growing tired.
So confidence in supply works with Enda Kenny there, but may not work if you have another leader there.
I think that's the reality of it. And the other thing we have to look at
people
is...
People might get very cynical about Fianna Fáil's position. If you didn't pull the plug when a man was smeared allegedly by arms of the state, when are you going to do it? Mm-hmm. When it suits you?
No. The motion from Sinn Féin was about that. But the real politics of that was...
But you abstained.
To put something...
You know, what
to
are
put
people
something
to read into
in place
that?
And to have that tribunal in place now... And to allow that work to go ahead. That was my main concern. Now, as far as other matters are concerned, yes, in the course of all of this debate within Fine Gael and what's going to happen over the next few weeks, we have to put the country first. Very well be that the Taoiseach will go to America and Patrick's Day. I think that you have a 6 week or something lead into the election itself of a new leader with all of the membership that you have. So in my opinion, we're moving very quickly towards an election in sometime in the middle of this year. Mm. And that's the reality of it. So therefore we
So what, the minute the leadership of Fine Gael changes, you're gone?
No. I think that because of the way Fine Gael have handled this, that it has
well,
put
what's
us
going to precipitate
much closer.
An election?
Daniel, but
much,
you're contradicting yourself.
No,
much
closer
with respect,
to a general election.
No, you're saying that you held confidence in us this week and abstained and held with the confidence and supply arrangement because we need a government and we need stability. But just as soon as we change a leader, if and when we do change a leader, well, then that's going to put all bets are off. Let's head to the hills.
No, I didn't say that, Regina. What I'm saying is that the Fine Gael party showed an incompetence this week. And that simply would not be accepted anywhere, to be quite frank about it.
You showed an arrogance in the course
of the Dáil debate that was actually frightening and showed us what you were really like.
No. Well, first of all, let me be very clear about this, is that the Fine Gael party was not in the dock this week. And we certainly didn't show an arrogance about anything. The people that were questioned this week by members of the opposition were the four ministers that had input into the setting up of the tribunal and events that had led up to that this week. Your party saw fit to abstain this week on Sinn Féin's motion of no confidence to allow the government to continue. What you're saying now is that you only did that because, you know, you're not ready for an election now. But as soon as you're going to get ready now and we change our leadership, well, then all bets are off.
Let me say
we either
this.
Need a government in place because of the external forces that are coming down the track, or we don't. Otherwise, you should have just pulled the plug and we'd have an election right now.
The Fine Gael side of the government, Regina, showed an incompetence this week that was staggering. And that came by way of the questions that were being put to the Taoiseach. And you know, someone has to stand firm in this and say, for the country's sake,
then why didn't you pull the plug?
Let's continue on. Let's get this stuff in order.
Okay.
You cannot
have
this
point,
Mary Lou,
in the
course
but
of
I'm kind
the
of confused. I'm sort of confused.
Go ahead, Mary Lou.
I'm confused now because the staggering incompetence piece, I think, is well established. That's a fact. And I can't think of any other walk of life where you mess up that badly and then you spin and evade and evade and spin and you stay in position when clearly all around you have lost confidence in your ability to deliver.
To get the tribunal up and running, that's
well.
John's
hang on
argument.
A minute. And I just wanted to raise this. This is going on 8 years. Morris set out 6 questions that he wants answered. And I thought in a very thoughtful way in his statement, he said he wants these answered first. And yes, there needs to be a tribunal. And yes, it needs to be established. I don't think there is any doubt, election or no election, that the only place this was going was to a public inquiry. It wasn't going anywhere else because the issues aren't going away. And the issues are too serious for all of us to get to grips to. But the facts
are... It only
are,
went to the public inquiry the when are, he insisted on it.
Oh, listen... And,
yeah, but that only happened within a week, because up until last week, he was quite happy to have a commission of inquiry.
No.
So
that's
not
he was
true.
Never
that's,
happy with
no,
the commission.
That's not true. It is true. He was happy to have a commission
he
of inquiry.
Regina.
I'm sorry, when he met with George Earl O'Neill, he was happy that we were going to instigate a commission of inquiry because the allegations that were released on the Thursday night from the primetime programme, and in a lot of ways it's, and I'm sure he doesn't feel this way, but from a public awareness into what's going on into different arms of the state, I think RT did a justice and a service that day. It was only because it now was in the open that I think, in fairness to him, he had to demand a public inquiry.
No, he demanded a public inquiry because I spoke to Maurice McHale about it, because he had absolutely no trust
in, a private
in what would
process.
Go on privately.
Well, he could have
had
He has been saying that
for quite some time. Mm. And I thought it amazing to listen in the Dáil to all of those people that stood up and said, oh, I spoke to Maurice McCabe, I called him. Where were they back over the years? Where was the government back over the years that they never acknowledged Maurice McCabe while they knew all of these stories and this gossip was going around the house and the man's family was being torn asunder?
I don't think that's fair and I don't think it's true.
It's accurate.
Well, I don't think it's fair and I don't think it's true, because if you look at the amount of inquiries that the government and the last government have instigated, albeit that haven't satisfied...
I'm talking about Maurice McCabe.
I am talking about it too. So
you
I'm talking
him,
about
and you allowed his
Gearan,
family to be dragged through the muck over years.
I'm talking about Ella O'Neill. You can't say it all of those.
Our first engagements, well, certainly mine, I think yours, John, was around the turn of events when Maurice came before the Public Accounts Committee. John was the Cathaoirleach at that time. Mm. And I'm sure you will verify this. We were put as a committee under the most enormous pressure not to have that man in. Mm-hmm. The commissioner, you recall, was threatening a judicial review. Or some judicial stay going to the courts. It was made very clear to us that the system did not want this man coming forward. And I am so pleased as a committee that we actually stood our ground and that we had Maurice in. Because potentially, had that not happened,
that's the more substantial issue. The comings and goings of politics during the week, the political fallout from it, the who knew what when and all that. That's all diverting up to a point. But the substantive issue is whether senior named Gardaí engaged in an attempt to essentially destroy the life of Maurice McCabe through a coordinated campaign. If that is true, and the guards deny that it is, that's the job of the commission to find out. If that is true, it's astounding. Mm-hmm. It's more important than any of the politics of it. And I think, you know, there has been a tendency amongst all of us in the political bubble, among political correspondents and so forth, to get tied up in the politics of the thing. But it's the substance of the issue that's actually
important.
Okay,
we're going to talk about that in less than 2 minutes, because we'll just take this quick break and we'll come back to you, John, then after that. John McGinnis, just before the break, we were coming back, or Pat Leahy was reminding us about the substance of this story and which led to all of the political activity towards the latter part of the week. But you're really at the centre of this story because of that meeting with Martin Callanan. You're one of the people that he was, you say, briefing against Maurice McCabe.
Yeah, and that's now going to be a matter for the tribunal, and I did say it previously in the Dáil about this. And as Mary Lou was saying before the break, there was enormous pressure put on the committee at that stage not to have Maurice McCabe in before us. In fact, we were threatened with legal action in order that the commissioner at that time might retrieve the evidence that had been given to us by Maurice McCabe. And the legal section in the Oireachtas definitely did not want him brought before us. And that's why we had the meeting in private. But when he came in that day, you had a range of politicians on one side of that table. He was on the other side on his own. And he gave such an account in a very calm, constructive way that he actually impressed everyone, even those that had doubted him in the very beginning. And it's interesting now, again, going back to prime time, that John Deasy
just so
came
we're clear,
out
just,
in that
just
program.
As you're saying that, I just want to be clear in my head. Was it the night before that you met Martin Callanan? The night before?
It was sometime a few days before.
So it was very fresh in your mind what Martin Callanan had said to you about this witness.
Yeah, and I had to take, you know, my own judgment call at that time, having reflected on it for quite a while, was to believe what I was being told by Maurice McCabe. And I took the risk of going through all of that, and I believe that I was right. And the Public Accounts Committee, more importantly, was right. But John Deasy came out.
Did Martin Callanan meet any other members of the committee?
Well, that's what I'm coming to. I understand that John Deasy, in his television interview, said that he was approached by the Gardaí in relation to the Maurice McCabe story. And then, I think on the same programme, we heard from Pat Rabbit to say he too knew about the attempts being made to smear the name
of
Maurice
McCabe. We don't
know
from who, though, I don't think.
No, we don't.
Mary Lou, you didn't get
an approach,
did you?
And that's what the tribunal is all about.
No, I didn't, and I don't know what that says. But I certainly, the person who confirmed for me the nature of what was being said about him was actually Maurice himself. Now, this is pre him knowing about the Tuisla file or the extent of this, but it was well known. But I think the really shocking thing, and Pat is absolutely right, if what is alleged transpires to be true, we are looking at a really, really fundamental crisis where arms of the state collude in a most, most vile way against an individual who, by the way, and I've said this to Maurice himself, he happens to be a serving member of An Garda Síochána. He may not think that that protected him in any way, but in a way it does. You're a uniformed officer of the state. So for regular five aides, ordinary people would say, well, if that can happen there, who is safe then? If that can happen then potentially to anyone. It is a terrible vista. They are allegations. Yeah. But as it's stacking up, and this is what's alarming, as the story moves, it becomes deep. The malaise becomes deeper and deeper, and it's taken a sinister look.
What
now,
is not an allegation is what's contained in the Tuisla file.
Absolutely,
these are stark facts that were written by professionals, supposedly caring for the children of the state, and supposedly following up on all of the
in error, the HSE say.
Yeah, but it's not just the cut and paste thing.
It's not a cut and paste job. If you when the file becomes, you know, available, I think that you will see that it's a very clear attempt to construct a file around a man's family to give certain impressions.
That's denied.
And that's denied.
But notwithstanding all that has been said here, I think what is incredible to my mind is that we still have a Garda Commissioner in situ while such allegations go on.
I think
it's absolutely reprehensible that the Taoiseach has offered her the confidence of the government, notwithstanding. I'm not prejudicing what her position. I have no evidence to her guilt.
Well, when you look at what Michael McDool said during the week, and Regina wouldn't mind hearing from you on this, you know, how can Gardaí give evidence about Noreen O'Sullivan when she's their boss at that public inquiry when it happens? It's very difficult for
her. It is difficult. But also, I mean, her position is exceptionally difficult because she has refuted the allegations in the most strongest of way.
But she's now subject to a tribunal of inquiry.
And I know that,
but
right?
The government hasn't accepted her word for that. It has set up a tribunal of inquiry to find out who is lying to them. Either Maurice McCabe is lying to them or Noreen O'Sullivan is lying to them.
And Dave Taylor
respect,
is in there as
there
well.
There is no such thing as her stepping aside without prejudice, because if she steps aside and subsequently is found innocent, she has no authority to come back thereafter. So at the end of the day, the presumption of innocence in our democracy, in our judicial system, stands, and she has to be afforded the same way that we would treat other people.
How are we treating the Gardaí who have to go in there and give evidence?
It's not about guilt or innocence. It's about how you run a force With credibility, while you're attending a tribunal and being responsible for 14,000 people and the security of the state. And it's my firm belief that it's not about guilt or innocence. It's about asking the commissioner to understand that very point and to make a decision on that that allows her to step aside. That's what needs to be done.
Is that the Fianna Fáil position now, John, that she should step aside?
It is my position. And it's a position that I've articulated within the party. And I'd like to see that happen. And that's in the interest of Noreen O'Sullivan.
Our time is up. Our time is up. Thank you all very much indeed for coming in. Callan's Kicks is up next for the first in a new series at 2 o'clock. We're on the television Monday night, Clareburn Live, 10:35. Hope you can join us then. Have a great weekend.
Saturday with Clare Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Researcher Rona Tarrant, and sound supervision was by Noel Roberts.